Today, we take everything you've learned in the first three episodes in my series of tips for advocating for yourself during labor, and we put them into action. I show you how to advocate during birth and give you tips that you can use in the moment. Hey friends, my name is Emily, and I'm your birth advocate. I'm a labor and delivery nurse that has a passion for helping birthers advocate for themselves against the toxic cultures of labor. I teach you the most up-to-date research surrounding pregnancy and birth, give you tips and tricks I have learned in my profession, and empower you to take back your rights as a birther. So welcome. Keep listening for authentic tips and evidence-based information you can count on. This is your Birth Advocate, the podcast. Hi, friends. Welcome back to my podcast, your Birth Advocate. Thank you for tuning in for another episode. I am so excited because this is the last episode in my launch of my first four podcasts. I really hope you enjoyed binging the first four episodes, and I hope that you learned so much. And this is where the journey ends for the launch episodes. Now, don't worry. We're going to be coming back with episodes every Thursday. That's right. Once a week, every Thursday, you'll get to hear more episodes from me, more birth education. You can also look forward to me bringing guests on the podcast, people from other realms of the birth world that I'm going to collaborate with, pick their brains on behalf of you guys. So I'm excited for the future of the episodes, and I hope you are too. Today, we are actually going to talk about how we're going to take all the information of the last episodes and put them into action. I know that being prepared to advocate for yourself is great, but actually doing it in the moment is scary. Providers and nurses and healthcare team members, they can be intimidating, and they do know more about birth than you. They went to school for a very long time. It can be really easy to start letting them intimidate you into going against the things that you know to be true and that you instinctually want for your body. And I don't want that to happen for you. So it's great to know that you can refuse things, and it's great to know about consent. It's great to know to pick your provider and what to do if your provider sucks. It's great to know how to research birth topics, but none of that matters if you get in the moment and you don't have the tools in your toolbox to do it. So let's do it today. Let's talk about that today. One of the first things that I think every birther needs, no matter what kind of birth you want going into the hospital, is a birth plan. And it's really important to have a good birth plan. I'm not talking about one that you find on the internet and you just print off and check the boxes. Those can be good if you do all the research behind it, but most people don't. I want you to have a birth plan that you have created. Someone else didn't create it for you and you checked the boxes. You created it through research and thoughtfulness and asking questions and gaining more than one resource to make decisions that you think are best for you. A good birth plan is worth $1 million in the birth world. Another thing about birth plans is a lot of the times I see birthers get discouraged when their first option in their birth plan kind of dismantles because things in labor change. So I want you to find a birth plan that goes through all of your options. So you can start to think about, this is what I would want first, but if that's not available to me, then let's go with this option next. And that way, when things change in labor, you're prepared for it. It doesn't overwhelm you. You know what's next. You know what you want in that case. It will really help you maintain autonomy and low anxiety levels during labor, even when things start to kind of get a little crazy, which oftentimes they do in labor. A birth plan, I want you to know, it's just a heads up for your doctor and your staff. They're not legally bound to it. A lot of times they will still try to talk you out of things. And that's discouraging, yes. I'd like to get to a point where healthcare team members use birth plans more seriously, but it's not always that way. So what you're doing with a birth plan is you're giving it to them as a heads up. This is what I'm going to advocate for. These are the things I've researched, and these are my wishes. Anything outside of these things needs to be a conversation. And it's a great conversation starter. If your doctor knows where you're coming from and knows where you're starting at in your wishes, it's way easier for them to approach certain topics with you, to educate you, to give you informed consent. It just kind of puts everybody on the same page. The best thing I think about a birth plan is that you've done the education behind it. It really helps you dig in before you deliver to know what you want. And honestly, I think that's the best use of a birth plan. Its best use is before you even go into labor. You are doing the research, you're deciding what you want, you're aligning your birth priorities, and it just makes you go into it much more educated and much more ready for the process. If you're unsure where to start on a birth plan, I do offer printable birth plan guides for vaginal delivery and a C-section on my website. I will link it below. These birth plan guides go through all of your options in detail. So it doesn't just give you boxes to check. It explains to you what all the options are and what they mean. It also is set up so that you're informing your healthcare team of your first, second, and third preference on most topics. That way, like I said, when labor changes, you're ready and prepared to change with it. If you're still feeling overwhelmed with your birth plan guide, I also offer a birth plan consultation. This is an hour-long meeting where we go through your birth plan, create it together. I answer any questions, I provide you research to help you make choices, and at the end, not only do you get your birth plan document digitally inputted, ready to take to the hospital, but you also get a document detailing everything we talked about, any questions you wanted answered, even if we didn't get to those questions in the meeting, and all the research that you requested and that we talked about in the meeting. So honestly, it's 1 hour long, but you get way more resources than just that hour. So honestly, that is my first tip for advocating in action. Come armed with a birth plan that you researched, that you prepared, that you know the ins and out of. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've went over birth plans with birthers and them being like, oh, I didn't even know I put that in there. That kind of stuff kind of starts to dismantle your confidence. But if you do the work ahead of time and you bring in a solid birth plan, it is going to make the process go smoother. Step two for advocating for yourself in action is asking your providers and your healthcare team, your nurses, everybody, for explicit informed consent before any intervention. If you think back to the first episode where I talked about the difference between assumed consent and explicit informed consent, you know that before cervical exams, before they break your water, before they place internal monitors, any intervention that they're going to do to you and your body, they need to be asking for permission, telling you the risks, benefits, and alternatives, and giving you the space to decide. This will go a long way in you maintaining a safe birthing environment and maintaining body autonomy during birth. So have it in your birth plan, but then when the first conversations that you have with your nurse and your provider, even if they change throughout shifts, is, I would like explicit informed consent before doing interventions. Please do not tell me what you're going to do. Please ask me if it's okay and give me the risk, benefits, and alternatives. This just sets the tone off the bat. You are not consenting to everything. They should not assume your consent. They should ask for it. Tip number three is take 5 minutes. Now, I talked about this in a previous episode, but this is really important. It is hard to make a decision when the nurse, the provider, whoever else is standing there over you. It is important to take 5 minutes, ask them to leave the room, please, and you can do this in most circumstances. Yes, there are emergency situations where this may not be feasible because time is everything in emergencies, but if it's not an emergency situation, just say, can you please step out of the room for a couple minutes? I'll call you when I'm ready to make my decision. This gives you a little bit more breathing room, a couple more seconds not to feel rushed, not to feel intimidated into a decision, and it helps you check in with your support person, check in with your birth plan, check in with your other resources to make a good decision for you. I want you to be confident enough to claim that time. If they're acting like you need to make a decision right now and they don't want to give you that time, I want you to ask them, is this an emergency? Because that will help them be like, okay, we need to take a step back. This isn't an emergency. She can have the time to decide. And, you know, even ask just like, can I just have 5 minutes? All I need is 5 minutes. And they should step out and give you that space that you need to make a good decision. Tip number 4 is using the BRAIN acronym. And I love this acronym. I've tweaked it a little bit from what you might find on the internet. It's not mine. I'm not claiming it, but I have tweaked it. And it really helps you when you do take those 5 minutes to assess your priorities, the priorities of the doctor, the safety, just everything in making a decision and try to make a clearer picture for what you want to decide. So in every decision that you make, if you follow the BRAIN acronym, you will have more confidence in your decision. And this is how you would use it. The B in BRAIN stands for benefits. What are the benefits of this intervention? The R stands for risks. What are the risks? The A stands for alternatives. Are there any alternatives to doing this right now? The I stands for, are we in imminent danger? So are the baby or I in any imminent danger that needs to be acted on right this second? N stands for, what happens if we do nothing? Just asking that question kind of makes a clear picture of whether or not something actually needs to be done. And I'm going to give you a quick example. You know, I love examples of how this can play out in action. I remember where I was. So here's an example. Your doctor comes in and says, we're having trouble picking up your contractions. I'd like to place internal monitors to monitor baby's heart rate and the contractions. And you say, why do we need to monitor the contractions? Like, what's the purpose of this internal monitor? And he says that when we're not tracing contractions, we don't know how many contractions that you're having. We don't want to overstress baby out. It would be good for us to place an internal monitor for baby's heart rate and an internal monitor for the contractions because we've tried to adjust the external monitor several times and we're just unable to get an accurate picture of your contractions. So you proceed to say, are there any risks for these internal monitors? The doctor explains to you the process, explains a couple risks, and he explains why he thinks that you are low risk for this intervention. You ask him if there are any alternatives, and he says, well, the only alternative is we just keep trying to adjust your monitor to see if we can pick up your contractions, but your nurse has been trying to do that, and there's no luck. So then you ask him if you guys are in any imminent danger. He says, no, the baby's heart rate looks fine. We're tracing the baby's heart rate, just not the contractions. We don't want to create imminent danger by stressing the baby out too much and giving too many contractions. So then you ask him, what happens if we do nothing? And he says, again, that they will be unable to trace contractions. They may not be able to titrate your Pitocin and continue your labor process if they cannot trace your contractions. So you ask him for 5 minutes and he leaves. So you think about the benefits of being able to trace your contractions and the risks, the alternatives that he says, if you're in any imminent danger, and what happens if you do nothing. So you decide that it's probably a good idea for them to trace your contractions. You bring them back in here and you say, I give you consent to place an internal monitor for my contractions, but were you planning on placing one for the baby as well? Because you remember him mentioning that, but he didn't really specify. He just said internal monitors for the baby's heart rate and the contractions. And he said, yes, well, if we're gonna place one internal monitor, we might as well place the other. So you ask him if there's anything wrong with the baby's heart rate. He says, no. You ask him if they're having trouble tracing the baby's heart rate. And he said, no, we haven't had problems, but you know, if we have one, we might as well have the other. It'll make it easier. They won't have to adjust the monitor. So with that, you think, okay, the benefits of this are that the nurses don't have to change the monitors. And that's the only benefits he's really given me. So you say, what are the risks? And he says, well, it is a small needle that goes just under the scalp of the baby's head. It can introduce an infection. It can nick your cervix. You know, he goes over the general risks. And you say, what happens if we do nothing? Then he says, well, then, you know, the nurses will come in here and adjust your monitor every time you move around. So again, you ask for another 5 minutes. He comes back in and you say, you know, I'm totally okay with the contraction monitor. I consent for you doing that, but I don't think that we need the internal fetal heart rate monitor yet. Let me know if the baby starts to become unable to trace or if we're in any imminent danger and we can talk again. So do you see how you used all or part of the brain acronym in those conversations to kind of figure out exactly what the doctor's concerns were, what was for convenience, and kind of ticked off that acronym to make a good decision for you and baby? And that is exactly how you should be using the brain acronym. Lastly, let's talk about confrontation. Now, even if you've picked a great provider, doesn't mean you're going to have a great nurse. Or what if you couldn't pick a great provider and you're kind of stuck with the one that you know is not going to be supportive? Or you're having confrontation with family members who don't support your decisions. I want you to be prepared for confrontation, and I want you to have the tools to deal with that. First, we're going to start with a little pep talk. You know what's right for your body. And you know how I know you know what's right? Because I know that your number one concern is having a safe delivery for your baby. You would never want to put your baby in harm. And also, I know that you've done the research and you've done the education because you're here right now listening to this podcast. You might follow me on my platforms. That is like the first step. You've already made the first step to educating yourself. So you clearly are not going into this situation willy-nilly. You have confidence that's backed by education. You have confidence that's backed by research. And that's how you're going to go into these sticky situations where you may be disagreeing. And you are going to make good decisions and you're going to handle the confrontation with ease because you're confident. Confidence makes confrontation so much easier. You know how to make safe decisions for you and your baby. And it doesn't mean that you never listen to your doctors, even though they're making you feel that way. And it doesn't mean that you only listen to your doctors. Like we talked about before, we have resources and education from many different sides. And that's how we make good decisions. So don't let your doctor or your nurse pretend like they are the end-all, be-all of all decisions. They're not. You use them as resources because they have gone to school and they do have good knowledge and they are experts in their field. But you also use the knowledge you've learned in research and you use all of that to make confident decisions. So just don't even buy into the confrontation. Don't let them try to manipulate you into backing down if you know what you're doing is safe for you and baby. You're going to use your brain acronym. You're going to use your birth plan, and all together, all of these things will end up with you following your intuition, whether it's going against what your doctor might be recommending or with your doctor. You're going to listen to what your doctor has to say. You're going to lean back on that research you did, and you're going to make a good decision. So confrontation can be hard, but don't let it stop you from being confident in your decisions. Also, if the confrontation becomes too much, don't forget, especially with nurses, that you can ask for another nurse. If you find that your nurse is not supportive, she's not helpful, she's not a resource to you, go to the charge nurse and ask for another nurse. If you're still running into problems, go to the nursing supervisor. If you're still running into problems, go to patient advocacy. And that's the same for providers. If you're running into problems, go to your charge nurse. Go to the nursing supervisor. These are the people that are meant to deal with these kinds of issues. I want you to feel safe and supportive in your delivery. And while that does sometimes lead to healthy confrontation, it should not lead to confrontation where you're feeling unsafe, belittled, put down. None of that should ever be happening. So please, if you feel that way in birth, go up the chain of command until you find someone that will help you. I promise. Especially if it's in the middle of the night, if you wake enough people up, you will start to get some answers. now it's time for our question of the week. I asked my Instagram just now four questions, and I got one from Mrs. Swiss, I think that's how you say it. She is asking about pain from the catheter while on magnesium and if she can refuse a catheter. So I'm going to try to make this as concise as possible. Magnesium infusions and preeclampsia are very complicated topics, but I'm going to try to be as concise and brief as I can. So first, it's important to know why we care about your urine so much on magnesium. Magnesium is meant to slow all your processes down, to slow all the smooth muscles in your body. Your bladder, your urethra, all of that, your kidneys, everything in there involves smooth muscles. So it's slowing your kidneys down, it's slowing your bladder down, it's slowing everything down. On top of that, preeclampsia can also affect your kidney function. So we're keeping a close eye on your urine output because as preeclampsia progresses, you can have decreased urinary output. Also, with the magnesium, it can decrease your urinary output. Now, the problem with these two things is that magnesium is a high-risk medication, especially at the levels that we are giving it to you for preeclampsia. We do not want you to become what we call magnesium toxic, which means too much magnesium has built up in your body. It can cause all kinds of problems, including respiratory distress, ultimately. It's a drug that we have to watch very carefully. We don't want it to get built up in your system. One way that we watch it carefully is your urinary output. If you aren't having adequate urine output, that means that the magnesium is not clearing from your body as fast as we're putting it in, which could lead to magnesium toxicity. So if you can think about all those things put together, first of all, you have preeclampsia, and that's already affecting your kidney's ability to function. Second of all, we're giving you magnesium to protect you from seizures and strokes from your preeclampsia, but that is also slowing down your kidney function. And then third of all, if your kidneys aren't functioning, the magnesium could build up too much in your system and cause all kinds of additional problems that we don't want. So with all of those things combined, that's why we care about your urinary output so much. And in turn, that's why the recommendation is for a catheter. Because with a catheter, we are able to measure every single drop of urine that your body produces in an hour. And that's what we're measuring, hourly outputs. We want your hourly outputs to be at least 30 milliliters. We want it to be more, but at least 30 milliliters. So every hour when we come in and we empty your catheter, we're measuring every little milliliter that your body put out to ensure that your kidneys are still functioning and that you're able to clear the magnesium that is protecting you right now. So with that being said, to know why we're doing something can help you make a decision if it's safe for you to refuse the catheter. As always, I'm always going to tell you that you have the right to refuse anything. Even if I don't think it's safe for you to refuse, you have that right. Now, catheters are uncomfortable. That is an unfortunate side of it. Catheters also have a risk of UTI. We call it catheter-induced UTI. So it's not that catheters don't come without their own risks. It's that we're measuring the risks of having a catheter against the risks of us not knowing that your kidneys are not functioning properly and that you're not able to clear that magnesium. One alternative to having a catheter is if you're able to pee. One alternative to having a catheter is for you to be going to the bathroom of some form or fashion and us measuring what is coming out. The problem with that is that it's not very accurate. It's not definitely not as accurate as having a catheter in. So if you are on the line of having adequate urine output and not having adequate urine output, it's going to be really hard for you to feel the urge to pee 30 milliliters. I mean, that's just like basically a little drop compared to what you would normally pee. So the problem with that is when it's most important for us to measure your output is when you're not going to feel the urge to pee and you're not going to be able to make it come out. One alternative that I would maybe recommend if you really hate the catheter, although ultimately I do recommend having the catheter, is if you are able to pee a good amount to prove to your nursing staff and the people taking care of you that your kidneys are still functioning and you are still clearing magnesium, you could ask your doctor, if I'm able to pee X amount every hour or every 2 hours, I would like to keep my catheter out. You're peeing enough to where we can safely say that your kidneys are working and the magnesium isn't building up, but you understand that if you stop peeing that much, then the catheter would be the safest option. So those are kind of my recommendations. As always, making an informed choice to either consent to something or refuse something is the most important, but it's really important for you to understand why we're doing what we're doing. And I think sometimes with magnesium, we fail to explain it. So I hope that was helpful for you, and I hope that I explained it in a way that you can understand. Okay, you guys, thank you so much for listening to my fourth episode of my podcast, Your Birth Advocate. I am so excited to start this journey with you guys. As always, please subscribe to the podcast. I'm going to drop an episode every Thursday. You don't want to miss it. We're going to talk about all kinds of topics. This podcast is allowing me to expand on things that I talk about on my social media platforms. So if you follow me on Instagram or TikTok at Your Birth Advocate, you can see more of this in shorter form. You can interact with me. You can tell me what you want to see on this podcast. Thank you guys for listening.